Good morning, everyone, and welcome. Welcome to worship at Flatwoods Church. For those of you gathered in the room, it's great to see all of you. For those of you worshiping with us online, thanks for joining us here today as well. A few years ago, I didn't introduce myself, I'm sorry. I'm Evie. I'm Evie Martin, senior pastor here at Flatwoods. There's always that little detail I like to include. For those of you who are new, welcome. A few years ago, a good friend of mine was working on his dissertation, and as he wrapped up his first doctoral program, I asked him some questions along the way in his journey, and I actually dived in periodically to conversation about his subject matter as his work was unfolding. That, in hindsight, is apparently more engagement than most doctoral candidates get from people outside their academic circles. Most of the rest of us don't care too much about dissertations, it turns out. But when it was all said and done, he sent me a copy, just for my leisurely reading, of course. I clicked open the file one random afternoon and started in so I could at least say that I had skimmed it. And right off the bat, as I perused his opening acknowledgments, I was ridiculously flattered when I found my name, my own name. Granted, it was several paragraphs behind many accomplished scholars and academics and practitioners, and also family and friends, and many of our other colleagues, but still, he had acknowledged me. Like, I had some small part to play in this really big accomplishment in his life. I still haven't read the whole thing. Sorry, Lucas, if you're watching this. But he got the degree, and he's on to his next PhD now, so he's doing just fine. A dissertation is not a goal that I have for my own life. It's not on my bucket list, so to speak. I, in no way, lifted a finger or did any intellectual work to consciously assist my friend in this monumental task of his own life, and yet he recognized and acknowledged that my support and encouragement had meant something to him, that it was part of his big story, and that felt really, really good. We're working our way through the character and story of Moses and the Hebrew people from the book of Exodus this month. And Exodus is an epic story, the epic story of what we call the Old Testament, and every epic story has a hero. We love hero stories. Our literature, our cinematography, and folklore and legend are piled high with them. This is like a search and find kind of situation here. Can you identify all the heroes? The danger sometimes in an epic hero story is that we can easily forget that they are never lone rangers. Their stories don't unfold or progress or become epic entirely of their own volition. Every epic story has supporting actors, characters along the way who lend or give essential pieces to the story, who provide resources or wisdom for the protagonist, who save them from imminent doom, who point them in the right direction, who listen to their intellectual ramblings for their dissertation. There's no such thing as a great story with no supporting actors. And we know this, so much so that we celebrate this category. We give them awards at the Oscars, Best Supporting Actor. We dedicate pages of acknowledgments to them in books. We keep statistics on them in sports, assists, RBIs. My son Laz got his first assist in a soccer game a couple of weeks ago, and that was a big deal. He loved it just as much as he liked scoring a goal. Supporting roles in all their many forms usually have just as much to teach us as the main character, if we're paying attention. In Exodus, the story is not just about Moses. It's about a whole lot of people. And today, we're going to pay attention to some of them. Sometimes when we read these epic stories with epic heroes, we honestly find it a little hard to relate to those heroes. We know, most of us, that we're not really hero material, at least not of the exotic scale. But the supporting roles invite us into spaces that feel more real. Actions and attitudes and behaviors that feel more like the things that play out in our everyday lives. So as we dive into some supporting actors today, I'll invite you to examine where you might better acknowledge these people in your own life, but also how you might become a meaningful supporting actor in someone else's story too. As I read through the whole book of Exodus again this week, I pulled out 5 supporting characters. There are more, of course, but I picked 5 and tried to name the distinct role that they play in the story. And because I love alliteration, I will unpack them for you this way. We have the courageous foremother, the companion, the celebrator, the coach, and the complement. Now, if you're a note taker, there you go. That's your outline. Take a picture, jot it down. If you're not, that's okay too. Let me just tell you their stories. In Exodus chapter 1, before the name Moses has even been uttered, we get a surprising amount of information about 2 everyday, ordinary Hebrew women. We even get their names, and that's pretty unusual for women who aren't title characters to be given names. It's an invitation to us to take a closer look. A recap of the very beginning of the story reminds us that the status of Hebrews in Egypt has declined over several generations, to the point that they now find themselves oppressed and enslaved under the rule of Pharaoh. As the Hebrew population continues to mushroom, Pharaoh feels threatened and begins to implement some control measures on this population. Exodus 1 then gives us this brief contextual tidbit. The king of Egypt spoke to 2 Hebrew midwives named Shiphrah and Puah. When you are helping the Hebrew women give birth and you see the baby being born, if it's a boy, kill him. But if it's a girl, you can let her live. Now, the 2 midwives respected God, so they didn't obey the Egyptian king's order. Instead, they let the baby boys live. So the king of Egypt called the 2 midwives and said to them, "Why are you doing this? Why are you letting the baby boys live?" The 2 midwives said to Pharaoh, "Because Hebrew women aren't like Egyptian women. They're much stronger. They give birth before any midwives can even get to them." So God treated the midwives well, and the people kept on multiplying and became very strong. These are the first supporting actors we encounter in Moses' story, and chances are they never even met him. These courageous foremothers played a critical part in this epic story without ever crossing paths with the main character. These are not women with much power to speak of. Certainly, as they crouch at a laboring woman's side in the throes of pain and childbirth, they do hold most of the power in that room. Their knowledge and wisdom, their experience in troublesome scenarios, their calm and confidence in the face of new mothers' panic and agony gives them authority behind those closed doors. But you can imagine them summoned to Pharaoh's court, Shiphrah and Puah walking together hand in hand, their long, graying hair tied back sensibly, given the nature of their work. Their eyes twinkle as they talk, for they are old friends. And the smile lines reveal the years behind this difficult but rewarding work. They've put on clean gowns today. The Pharaoh has summoned them. And only God can know what it is that he might ask of them. Their conversation lulls as the palace looms closer. Their hearts beat, unknowing, untrusting, afraid. The request is harsh. Blood thunders through their eardrums as the command settles in. Kill the baby boys. Do not let them live. They are midwives. Their hands wrestle life into this world, not out of it. Their ears fill daily with first cries. Silence is deafening in their line of work. This decree violates their very calling. Every fiber of their beings resists, recoils, refuses. And so Shiphrah, whose name means fairness and clarity, and Puah, whose name means glitter and brilliance, march out of the Pharaoh's palace with no intention whatsoever to do what he has asked. Theirs is quite possibly the first recorded act of civil disobedience. They do not do what the law has required of them because it is unjust, it is wicked, and their very souls will not allow it. And their courage in this act of resistance changed the future of their people. Shiphrah and Puah used what little power they had for the purpose of thwarting evil when it looked them in the eye. Their beneficiaries were unknown to them. They took a personal risk and made the decision that was just for the sake of generations to come. Children, people, leaders, liberators they would never meet. It may be strange to begin with supporting actors who never even cross paths with the hero, but that is what the story delivers to us. There are people whose choices for justice generations ago paved the way for you to be here, to live the life you're living, to stand up and face the world, challenges and all that we live in. It is good to stop and give thanks for the faithful people in your story. Maybe you know them, probably you don't, who took a risk and made a choice that wasn't centered on them, but on the future and you who would inhabit it. Can we in turn think about ourselves in this supporting role of courageous foremother, forerunner, if you will? People willing to stick out our necks for the injustices of today, thinking strictly not of ourselves but of the future, taking courageous risks so the world can be safer and healthier, greener, less violent, and more free for the people we probably will never meet, because it is what is right and just and good. Your courage matters, not just to you and to those you know now, but to those who have lives that have not even yet begun. Our next supporting actor role is quite different in basically every way. This is the role that we most easily think of when it comes to epic stories. The role is companion. This is Coach Beard to Ted Lasso. This is Hermione and Ron to Harry Potter. This is Travis Kelce to Patrick Mahomes. I think that's 2 weeks in a row Travis Kelce has made it into a sermon, so just keeping track there. In the Moses story, this role goes to his brother Aaron. But Moses said to the Lord, "My Lord, I've never been able to speak well, not yesterday, not the day before, and certainly not now since you've been talking to your servant. I have a slow mouth and a thick tongue." Then the Lord said to him, "Who gives the people the ability to speak? Who's responsible for making them unable to speak or hard of hearing, sighted or blind? Isn't it I, the Lord? Now go, I'll help you speak, and I'll teach you what you should say." But Moses said, "Please, my Lord, just send someone else." Then the Lord got angry at Moses and said, "What about your brother Aaron, the Levite? I know he can speak very well. He's on his way out to meet you now. He's looking forward to seeing you. Speak to him and tell him what he's supposed to say. I'll help both of you speak, and I'll teach both of you what to do. Aaron will speak for you to the people. He'll be a spokesperson for you, and you will be like God for him." Aaron is Moses' right hand. From this moment on in Exodus, wherever we find Moses, we find Aaron. In fact, it's Aaron who does most of the talking. Throughout the whole plague sequence with Pharaoh to get the Israelites out of Egypt, Aaron is the one who speaks publicly, making God's demands of Pharaoh, speaking loudly enough for all the people to hear. If you look closely at the dialogue throughout these first many chapters of Exodus, you see Moses only speaking to God and to Aaron, and then he'll go and speak to the Pharaoh behind closed doors when they are summoned. But all of the big stuff, the bold stuff, the stuff that everybody hears, that's Aaron. That's not necessarily how we see it in the movies or in our children's Bible storybooks, is it? But Aaron is in lockstep with Moses. They could probably finish each other's sentences, and they knew with one mind what God was asking of them. Aaron is there to do difficult things with Moses, to give him courage, to share his burdens, to bounce ideas off of later when they are in the wilderness for decades on end. Without Aaron, there is no Exodus story. And yet, his is not the name we remember. He is Moses' companion. with him in all things. This kind of supporting actor is harder to come by. Often they are friends, sometimes they are a spouse, maybe a sibling, like Aaron. But they usually develop over a long time. If there is a companion in your life, maybe even one from an earlier chapter from whom you have drifted, today might be a really good day to send them a note, send them a text, give them a call, to let them know that you would not be you. You would not be who you are today without them. Maybe even recall a really specific time when they challenged you or when they stepped in with you when you were falling apart and really afraid. Let them know what that has meant to you. And then you might think about someone that you deeply believe in, someone in your life or in your circle who is living for a purpose greater than their own, like Moses was. Someone who is maybe alone, even afraid, and could use some company in the work that they have cut out for them. With a companion, they could be brave and go far. And maybe that companion is you. I don't believe that it was an afterthought that God sent Aaron with Moses. We are meant to accompany one another in this adventure of life. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. Our next kind of supporting actor is short and simple. This is the celebrator. In chapter 15, right after the Israelites have escaped Egypt and made it safely across to the other side of the Reed Sea, after the waters have parted, we see a huge party. Well, I'm assuming that it was a party. I think that's what people do when they are finally free. But there's lots of singing and dancing, and it's led by Miriam. You remember her from the very beginning? She is Moses' sister, who watched over him as he floated down the Nile in a basket. She saw him safely into the hands of Pharaoh's daughter and then finagled a way for her mother to still be her nursemaid, her brother's nursemaid. This girl is scrappy, and she knew from the start that Moses had a special purpose. And now, here in their first moments of freedom after years and years of longing, we read this. Then the prophet Miriam, Aaron's sister, took a tambourine in her hand. All the women followed her, playing tambourines and dancing. Miriam sang the refrain back to them. Sing to the Lord for an overflowing victory. Horse and rider he threw into the sea. Miriam is someone who knows Moses, who knows what purpose God has for him, who has seen him struggle, watched him and Aaron persevere, and now she celebrates what God has done in and through them. Everyone needs a celebrator in their life, someone who reminds you of your purpose and power, someone who will throw a party, literally or figuratively, when you've done a really amazing thing, who will sing a song, literally or figuratively, for you when you've done really hard things and just need to feel good about yourself for a minute. Miriam doesn't figure in as a large supporting actor, although I suspect she was much more active in the whole of the story than our text indicates. But she shows up in critical moments, in this case, to lead the singing. I bet there is someone in your life. Maybe you don't see them often, or you haven't talked in a while, but when you need a word of encouragement or someone to remind you that you're pretty amazing, you can give them a call. I have a friend like that. I don't see her often at all. She doesn't live nearby. Her life is chaotic and busy just like mine, but I can literally just text with whatever is going on in my day, and she will text back all the affirming words with all the excessive punctuation to match to remind me who I am. It doesn't take much to turn my day around because she so quickly breaks out the tambourines. And how easy is it for us to be the tambourine shakers too? Not really. I'm terrible with a tambourine. Don't ever give me one to play up here. It would be very bad. But what does it cost us to be the celebrator for someone else? Unprompted, even. It costs us nothing to point out a wonderful thing that we notice in someone's life, to remember a time for them when they were faithful to God, to their convictions, their purpose, and remind them of that with lots of exclamation points. When you are a celebrator, you can turn someone's day around in an instant. More of that, please. You can start sending that text right now. I'll let you do it. Just go ahead. Be a celebrator. This next supporting role might be my favorite, just because he's so direct. This role is coach. And that word has been formalized in many ways, even beyond the sports world in recent years. We can have paid coaches for anything these days, and that's great. But this role of coach simply means someone who has enough experience to point out how you might do something better. Listen to this supporting actor, Jethro. The next day, Moses sat as a judge for the people, while the people stood around Moses from morning until evening. When Moses' father-in-law, Jethro, saw all that he was doing for the people, he said, "What's this that you are doing for the people? Why do you sit alone while all the people are standing around you from morning until evening?" Moses said to his father-in-law, "Because the people come to me to inquire of God. When a conflict arises between them, they come to me, and I judge between the two of them. I also teach them God's regulations and instructions." Moses' father-in-law said to him, "What you are doing isn't good. You will end up totally wearing yourself out, both you and these people who are with you. The work is too difficult for you. You can't do it alone. Now, listen to me. Let me give you some advice, and may God be with you. Your role should be to represent the people before God. You should bring their disputes before God yourself, but you should also look among all the people for capable persons who respect God. They should be trustworthy and not corrupt. Let them sit as judges for the people at all times. They should bring every major dispute to you, but they should decide all of the minor cases themselves. This will be much easier for you, and they will share your load." Jethro has come from Midian to visit Moses and the people out in the wilderness. He sees what's going on, and he's like, "Hang on a second, there's a much better way to do this." Now notice, he is not offering his unsolicited opinion on something he knows nothing about. That's a problem in our world today, is it not? Don't do that. Rather, do you remember what Jethro did in Midian? Anyone remember his job in Midian? Bible trivia question for you. He was a priest. He was the leader of the people there. The man knows how to organize a community. He gives Moses, who is still green in this regard, a better way to lead, and Moses does it. Who are your trusted coaches? Who in your life will say to you, "What you are doing isn't good. You will end up totally wearing yourself out"? Not everyone gets to be that person, right? There has to be a high level of trust, of course. But do you have people you're willing to listen to? And if so, do they know you would like their coaching, their counsel, their wisdom? Sometimes just telling a person that you'd like that from them will bless your life in ways that you can't imagine. And on the flip side, are there areas of your life where you have gained wisdom, maybe through experience, maybe through pain and trials, but at some point along the way, you may be the one to share what you know and what you see with someone who's just starting to make their way? No joke, literally as I was typing this section of my sermon, I got a text from a pastor friend of mine who's newer in ministry than I am, asking, "What does a pledge or stewardship letter look like?" This is not major life wisdom, but she hasn't done one, and I have. Yours are coming soon, by the way. I don't necessarily think of myself as a coach, but in this, I could help her along. I don't doubt that you have many ways of doing the same. Finally, we end up with the supporting role of complement. We meet briefly in the book of Exodus a young man who will figure much more prominently in the stories yet to come in the Old Testament. But in chapter 17, the Israelites have encountered conflict out in the desert of Sinai. Amalek came and fought with Israel at Rephidim. Moses said to Joshua, "Choose some men for us and go fight with Amalek." Moses knew that his role, his abilities, his age, his gifts, meant that he was not the one to take the men out to battle. Enter Joshua, a complement to Moses, with gifts and strengths of his own. After his success in this particular battle, we see Joshua just a couple more times in Exodus, named as Moses' assistant. But of course, as Moses' story ends, we know that Joshua is the one to take up the mantle and lead the people on into the promised land. No hero can do everything. And so a complement supporting actor is one who can do the things you cannot, who has strength where you have weakness. In Joshua, we meet a complement who also takes the baton then and continues the work. Complements are not always easy for us to acknowledge. We live in a culture where it is difficult to admit weakness or accept help or name that we simply cannot do it all on our own. And yet, Moses would have been up a creek without Joshua's gifts and strength. Who are we to think that we are good at everything, strong in every area? Calling out other people's gifts and talents is what good heroes do. Letting them shine in their moment for the sake of the whole story. What are your weaknesses? And who comes alongside you with strengths that you could never imagine? Do you feel threatened by that? Or do you see how God is up to something in bringing people together as a whole? And do you offer your own self, your unique design, to be useful for what God is up to in someone else's life, or even bigger, in our whole story, in our life together here as a church? Are you a complement to what God is doing in us together? There are no small parts, only small actors. Konstantin Stanislavski has famously said, and I found this poignant excerpt about him in Acting Magazine, which will leave us with our task for today. Stanislavski is known as the father of modern acting and revolutionized the craft of acting, not only for lead performers, but also for bit actors and background actors. Prior to him, actors with smaller roles often gave smaller performances. They moved with no sense of purpose. They performed their characters with no depth, no commitment. In effect, they were spectators more than they were actors. Stanislavski found this unacceptable. He required actors who performed in his theater productions to engage their roles with equal commitment, whether they were the lead actors with large roles or supporting actors with few lines or no lines at all. When Stanislavski's company, the Moscow Art Theater, toured the world, audiences were amazed at this sea change. Not only did the lead actors perform their characters with depth and truth, but actors in the background moved with a sense of purpose. They were not mere spectators. They were actors fully committed to achieving their character's objective, whether they had a speaking role or not. In Moses' story, we understand better how God intends for God's whole story to unfold. We are the actors, some lead, some supporting, courageous, companion, celebrator, coach, or compliment. But no part is small. And we have the choice, really the call, to act out our lives together with depth and truth, with a sense of purpose, and fully committed to God's objectives. That is what will make the story epic. Will you pray with me? God, on the stages of our lives, may we see your hand at work. In our own lives, as we take on roles of courage and companionship, as we celebrate others and offer our wisdom and help carry others' loads. And may we see your hand at work in the lives of others as we experience their support and encouragement. May we give thanks as we live into the beauty of a story that is never told alone, for you are with us We are with one another. Thanks be to God. Amen.